Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome a really good friend, Chris Litzler. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, hey, Mike. How are you? Good to be with you.
Appreciate you. It's great to have you on the podcast. Your wisdom is always deep and appreciated. So it's so awesome to have you. You are a CRE mortgage broker, one of the really senior people in the industry. You're young, but you've been doing this for a long time, and you are now with Marcus & Millichap, one of the largest players in the space. Any other quick accolades, just any other comments about you?
Yeah, I sit in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm with Marcus & Millichap. We've been here since 2018 when they bought our little boutique mortgage banking company. And maybe I'm one of only a few podcast guests that are as big as Big Mike.
Yeah, we're both a tall guy, so that's you can't tell it on a podcast, but yes, you get up. I think you're even a little taller than me, and I'm 6'4". You're probably like 6'5" or something.
Well, when Well, a few more years, I might shrink an inch or two, and you'll have me.
I don't know about that. I'm a little bit older than you, so yeah, I'll probably shrink faster than you. All right, so let's jump into the what's going on in the commercial mortgage business. What are the opportunities? You know, we're recording this early August, 2025. A lot of things have transpired since kind of the market being hot and healthy in 2022. We have seen pretty difficult 23 and 24, and 25 is sort of hopefully the year of recovery. Anyway, I'll let you share your wisdom and your thoughts. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, so that's definitely what I would say. So transaction volume is considerably off the highs that we saw in 2021.
What does it mean, considerably off the high? Are you off 20%, 30, 40, 50 more?
I think industry wide, we're probably down 40-ish percent from 2021, but we're probably up 20 to 25% from 2023 and the first half of 2024. So we're probably, so I think transactions.
Is this 2025 thing?
Year to day 2025. Yeah, last 2 to 3 quarters, we've seen a decent amount of volume pick back up.
So, okay, that's great. That's the first sign of recovery is volume, right? You get more and more buyers looking to buy.
Definitely. So as you, 2021 banger years. I would say that so far year to date and kind of what the outlook looks like is we're kind of back to that 2018, 2019 amount of volume.
So that's not bad. That's, you know, all things considered, it's a recovery in progress. That's what you're observing volume wise.
Definitely. Of course, it depends on the product type, right? I think, probably 60 to 70% of my business is multifamily, and that has been pretty resilient, right? You have the agencies that are mandated to provide liquidity to apartments. So that's stayed pretty strong. Industrial, fine. Retail's been pretty resilient. But, there are some asset classes like office and even self-storage that have been troubled for other reasons, right?
Yeah, it's the supply-demand disbalance. Those asset classes have been, like office almost permanently damaged. Storage has been oversupplied, and it's very difficult to grow demand if you have too much supply. You got pricing wars to get the occupancy. So it's good to hear multi is recovering. Obviously, open air shopping retail has been remarkable. I mean, I just came from a trip, and just a quick comment. I was in Rochester, New York. And what's really fascinating, there's an enclosed mall called Marketplace Mall that's really kind of dead or almost have died, and then a little bit of recovery in the form of like go-karts and a few other things that going in. And then you have open-air shopping plazas next to it, like 5 minutes away, and they're thriving. They're so busy. It's just amazing how consumers shifted away from that. But let's continue So transaction-wise, you see recovery. Price-wise, are you seeing any improvements in multi shopping, industrial, things that are doing reasonably well? Are you seeing any bit? I mean, through the cap rates, I don't know how else. I mean, basically, how do you look at the valuations? My assumption are the cap rates. That's the industry standard.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think the metric that we're kind of tossing around is that apartment values are probably off plus or minus 15% from peak levels.
That's not bad, by the way. That's not bad because I heard 20 to 40%. So if you're at 15%, meaning that you're seeing already recovery from those bottoms of the really bad market.
Well, I think I should preface that by saying that I sit in Cleveland, Ohio. So most, 50 to 60% of my volume is in the Midwest. So the Midwest by nature is going to have less volatility, less swings, but less appreciation. We're definitely seeing some deals that are, 30% discounts to pricing. You got to be careful though, because when you evaluate values, right, a lot of things can change, right? Did the property have rent growth and we're just seeing cap rate expansion, or, is occupancy down because the operator didn't operate the property as well? But all else equal, Midwest, 15 to 20% discounts from on basically the same type of assets. So we're we are starting to see a little bit of that stuff unlock. For the last couple of years, not a lot of trades, right? Guys just trying to hold on, thinking that there's going to be some sort of catalyst that's going to save them. But we're starting to see the lenders predominantly force borrowers' hands, because these deals wouldn't be able to be refinanced cash neutral. So there would be equity having to go in. So if the lender's not willing to work with you, at some point these things got to sell. So we are starting to see some of that stuff unlock, predominantly bridge loans, that were on the 3+1+1, kind of getting to the end of that, end of that business plan, and lenders just saying, it's out of time. You're out of time. It's time to sell.
So you're seeing for sale, I guess these are essentially depressed, discounted, motivated seller transactions because they can't refinance or are not able to refinance. Raising equity capital is hard. So if they can't raise fresh pref equity or something like this, they're forced to sell in a for sale situation. There's a discount for the, for the for sale conditions, right?
Yeah, definitely. And as a result, probably the properties are not performing as well as it otherwise could be, right? If, if you've made it 5 years on a bridge loan, probably a lot of that excess cash flow has been eaten up by debt service. So you haven't had the free cash flow to reinvest into your units, cure any deferred maintenance that's built up. You may have been suffering from occupancy issues, maybe down units that aren't online. So, he has multiple factors that are not driving great values.
So are most of the transactions sort of bridge to bridge? Or I guess they're for sale because Fannie Freddie, they're stabilized. I guess it's not a for sale. That's a refi of sort, or a stabilized property gets sold to an agency loan. These are normal transactions, but you're saying it's not as many. You're seeing more of a distressed product.
You're just not seeing a ton of guys that have owned this property for 10 years, property stabilized. There's no imminent maturity event. Maybe they refinanced in 2021, 2022. You're not seeing a lot of those guys say, now is the right time for me to sell this asset, right? So the stuff that, typically would be on the market, right? For some event, right? Partnership, dissolution, death, whatever it is, normal reasons for selling, you're not seeing a lot of that stuff, right? Folks just haven't kind of gotten to the point where that 20-ish percent discount from 2021 is attractive to them if they don't need to do it. We're seeing get sold right now is, having some sort of event, right? Maturity, covenant breach, capital call, some reason for the sale rather than just, this is the right time. We think that we're maximizing value.
Well, everyone is, you know, survive until 24, then survive until 25. Now survive until 26 if you can hold on. I mean, if you think about it, refinancing from 21, 22, when the interest rates were very low on a five-year term, you still have plenty of time to wait out. If you're a bridge, like you said, you know, on a three-year bridge, your bridge matured. And, yeah, I mean, I certainly see this. So let's go to refinance scenarios. What are you seeing on the refinance front? So for sale, yeah, obviously those things are not fun, not good for sponsors, great for buyers probably. On the refinance scenarios, are you seeing required equity contributions, rescue and recovery capital, recapitalization capital? How sponsors are navigating basically tight credit conditions if they're trying to get a fresh mortgage and some new pref equity? Are you seeing, you know, what are you seeing out there?
So I'll break it into kind of two situations. The first is if the property is stabilized and performing, so 90%+ occupancy, lots of options, right? CMBS, life insurance companies, agency, a lot of options for private credit, bank, credit unions, lots of options for stabilized properties, right? In that scenario, with kind of where we're seeing interest rates on performing deals, for the most part, we can get close to cash neutral on deals that were purchased between 2020 and 2022. So even though, you know, even though price was high, we've seen enough rent appreciation, and the first mortgage, you know, typically was 75 or 80% of that cost, right? We can typically roll that loan amount where rates are today. If the property is not performing, so sub 90% occupancy, maybe some down units, some deferred maintenance, that is a very challenging situation to be in. There's just not a ton of options. So those deals typically require some amount of cash going into the deals to roll them either to a bank or another bridge loan.
Yeah, when we have a deal just like this, we kind of got refinanced and with a new bridge, basically bridge to bridge, and it required new significant fresh pref equity, and that pref equity, boy, it's expensive. I mean, I want to be in that position. We actually love doing this. We are doing this to whatever degree we can. But pref equity today gets ridiculously good terms from risk return perspective. But that's the only path, right? If you have a matured loan and the lender doesn't want to give you any more time, they want to get repaid from their liquidity needs, exactly that scenario. And that's, I guess we're all seeing the same thing. It's a tough scenario. You're going from bridge to a bridge, and that other bridge lender also is playing tough. So,
yeah, and even, you know, even if the economics work, right, the bridge to bridge scenario is just it's kind of hairy. So the lender typically requires cash in just to feel better about it, right? Like even if it's a fine debt yield, even if it's kind of like an okay business plan, you know, bridge to bridge is just such a hairy situation that typically requires, you know, some percentage of cash in regardless. So guys that can get their property stabilized at least have a lot more options.
Yeah, I agree. It's all about execution.
What are you seeing for the economics that you guys are getting on the pref?
I mean, well, one of the deals was just done. So here's an example how attractive the pref is, right? It's basically they're behind primary debt. They get 1.5x on their money, I think in three years, or our minimum IRR between 15% and 20%, plus like 25% of an upside.
Okay.
So if you run the math on that IRR between the pref coupon, what you call it, kind of the minimum earned, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the 25% upside, you are pretty much easily in the 20s, maybe mid-20s, maybe even higher in the 30s, right?
Right, if it works out, right.
Yeah, if it works out, of course. But that pref equity pushes back common equity. I mean, that's another thing that happens, right? So as a common equity, you don't really have a wonderful choice of options. You either wind up in a for sale transaction, or you take fresh pref equity with these pretty steep terms. And what I also see a really important component within the deal that got closed, I think it's actually a blessing. The pref equity shops, at least the bigger shops, they require that they bring in their property management. Mm. They want to take over execution and control over who is managing the property, because they're putting all the fresh capital. Money talks. So they want their property manager to run the show. So,
and
I don't think it's a bad thing, right? I mean, they're probably
cash management and all the other hoops that come along with it, right? I mean, it's
well, they get paid first, right? At the end of the day, you in common equity at that point don't really have too many wonderful options. You're still in the deal, but you are behind them. They're running the show with their property manager. If they execute well, they'll get their 1.5x, and then they'll get a decent amount above if the markets recover and they execute well. And that's what these transactions look like. Is this a bad choice? I think that's the only choice, right? It's kind of like you sell, you take a big haircut, or you if it's there are a few scenarios. You sell, you lose all your equity. You sell, you lose 60% of your equity, for example, right? Horrible scenario, pretty bad scenario, right? Or scenario number three, you refinance, and then you live, and if the property gets back to the 2022 valuations, right, with execution and et cetera, you have a decent chance of recovery, but you do have to obviously recover more than the cost of that 1.5x. Yes,
right, right.
So let's continue the discussion. How the underwriting standards and valuations expectations change from 22 until now?
Yeah.
25.
Okay, so let's start with how lenders are viewing this stuff. The banks are still kind of uncovering what's going on with their book. So the banks have been a little bit more conservative, which is to say better sponsors, better quality assets, better locations, and better in-place cash flow. So the banks have been a little bit more conservative. So what they're basically lending on stabilized properties, right?
Easier underwriting, right? They can easily underwrite debt service coverage ratio. They can underwrite LTV and many other variables.
Yep.
But how are they valuing these properties? Because the volume is low and not too many comps. So I'm just curious how they are looking at the valuations and debt service coverage, of course.
Yeah, I mean, of course, on a refinance, right? Deferring to an appraisal, right? Most deals today are constrained by coverage versus value, right? So they can pretty easily get to what actual in place cash flow is, throw in their loan terms, and you can size to a 120, 125, 130 somewhere, you know, depending on the asset. So that's typically the constraint of most loans today.
So debt service, I would think it's the reverse, right? I would think that the LTV is more of a constraint, but you're saying LTV is fine, but the debt service coverage is a bigger issue. If insurance is up, if your costs are up, if your rents didn't grow fast enough, you can't service the debt
because it's harder to do that. Because on a refinance, without the amount of trades, we're still getting pretty good appraisals, right? Pretty low cap rates, right? So the constraint is still on coverage. And on acquisitions, right, value is price, right? So that's your value there. So there's two types of deals that are kind of getting done right now. The first is like low basis, kind of distressed, like opportunistic type deal, where you can absorb the higher cost of capital, because most of the lenders for that that's a bridge loan, right? So that's a little bit expensive. So you need that more opportunistic stuff to be able to make that math work. And then the second type of deal that's getting done is the better quality core type asset that is trading at a discount to replacement cost, where equity's okay with that 5-6% yield because they like the real estate and they like the discount to to 2021 valuations. And that's getting done, you know, with pretty tight spreads. Agencies pricing, I mean, low 100s for full leverage deals. with a lot of I/O. So you
over
can still
over 10 year.
Yeah, 5, 7, 10. You could go longer, of course, if you want to. We're seeing a lot of 5 and 7 year deals, but of course, you know, 10 year money is available for the right sponsor.
Yeah, I got you. On the bridge side, just curious, there's a general expectation that the short-term interest rates will come down. The Fed, even though they are very hawkish today, I mean, Jay Powell is sort of a big hawk at this time. But over the next 12 months or 18 months, there's a pretty high expectation that whoever Trump appoints will be a dove. They will cut, you know, faster than Powell for sure. And even Powell will cut, right? I mean, the expectation is he'll cut in September, maybe one more cut in December. Probably if he stays full term, he'll cut, I don't know, twice before his term expires in 26. So just Powell doing his thing without new Fed chair, we're probably by, you know, end of May, 1% less than we are now, and then new person comes in and Trump says cut it by 3%. So they'll probably continue, maybe even do some 50s instead of quarters, right? So we expect the rate, short-term rates come down. So when they do bridge loans, do they have like a floor on them? Is that how it functions? Because the lenders don't want to be, you know, cutting the rates when this thing, you know, when Fed cuts.
Yeah, so there's definitely some floor. It's negotiable. We're not seeing a ton of elective floating rate loans, right? Like a bridge loan, of course, needs to be a floater. And you're usually getting a floor, you know, 100 to 200 basis points below where you're at the closing, right? Below the current level.
So it's not bad. It may be attractive for those people who actually feel that they need to have the flexibility of a refi option within, you know, 2 or 3 years or something like this. And then they expect the rates to fall. It's almost like the more I think about it, if you're getting any kind of a value ideal, you don't even have a choice, right? You have to get a floater type of bridge loan. But even if you're at 90%+ occupancy and locking in fixed rate as prepayment penalties, that whole conversation was completely reversed when the rates were low. It made sense to lock long-term. Now it's almost like on a cash flow basis, it's hard to make the numbers work. But if you know, overfund enough and you have interest reserves, maybe it's better to consider a floater today because the interest rates really have only one direction to go, down. The speed of these cuts is unclear, but it's just one directional thing for the next, I don't know, year and a half,
yeah,
2 years, right?
And you could always buy an in the money cap to bring your pay rate down to, you know, some level where you can support it in the near term. If you think that it's, you know, only 12 months out or 18 months out before you can before rates are at a level where you want them to be at. So yeah, there's definitely some hedging options that could be you know, that could make sense. We're not seeing a ton of guys electing to do that though.
Well, it's psychological, right? People have been burned on the floating rate debt, and too many of them prefer to lock.
Yeah, the reason you would traditionally do that is to have that flexibility in the prepayment. So what guys are doing instead is they're just doing 5-year loans, and maybe you're doing 3 years of yield maintenance and 1% thereafter if you really think that that you want to get out of it early. Or some private credit options are available with a little bit better prepayment penalties that get you in the same fixed rate as you would be on the floater today. So just some different options where you can achieve the same thing.
Very cool. Next question, we have about 5-6 minutes. So I just want to make sure we cover. So what are the capital stack structures that are emerging? Common equity versus preferred equity versus rescue capital. What are you seeing in what's transacting today on the refi side and then even the new acquisition? Are people using pref and common equity mix?
So the pref is available, but it's expensive, as you mentioned. So I think the preference today is traditional, like traditional LP, just kind of the typical GP LP structure. first mortgage as high as you can get it, and then just traditional LP equity on top of that. But what we're seeing is in these, you know, kind of these private client deals, so sub $25 million, so sub institutional, it's becoming more difficult to raise equity, right? You just can't generate high enough IRRs and equity multiples to entice, you know, the traditional, you know, smaller check mom and pop investors. So what some guys are doing a little bit lower first mortgage, right? So, you know, call it 55 to 65% leverage, better pricing, a little bit of pref on top of that, and then common to fill the gap. So that's, you know, that's one thing that we're seeing. But the pref is expensive, and these guys, if they don't need to, they don't want to give up, you know, as much control or, you know, as much of the economics if they don't have to.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously on the refi front, that's super expensive, the rescue capital. On the new money, I mean, we've used that structure, one of the deals early in the year, Waverly, with the institutional pref. And the beauty about that, if you can get that and takes no depreciation, right? The common takes an outsized depreciation and the 100% bonus is back with the one big, beautiful bill. So from that perspective, I think actually it's even more attractive now than ever before for the reasons you mentioned. One is bonus depreciation is back. Two, very hard to raise common equity. So if your exercise shrinks by 50%, you have 50% preferred, 50% common, and the preferred comes from some kind of institutional shop, your job on the common is way easier. At least you could still pencil, you know, decent IRR numbers. I mean, it comes down to the right type of deal, right? It comes down, you have to have very high confidence you're buying right today, and the extra level of, you know, risk of a capital stack position can be justified easily if you buy right, right? Make the money on the buy. If that's an approach, it feels good. If you feel uncomfortable, then yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be doing this.
Well, we'll have to see if that 100% bonus coming back really spurs some year-end transaction volume. Historically, the end of the year tends to be a little bit busier. So we'll see if that's kind of spurs some stuff, because the last few years haven't been 100%. So with it being back, I hope that you're right. You couple that with a little bit lower rates. You know, a little bit of decline the last couple of days. If that keeps up, you know, we'll see. Could be a little gasoline for us.
Yeah. Your words to God's ears, right? It's kind of like we want to believe it. It feels a little bit like that with interest rates sort of coming down the longer end of the yield curve. And then, you know, I've talked about this quite a bit. The difference between the old rule of 40% and the new rule back to 100% is 2.5x. If you are an REP, if you are somebody who could use the depreciation, it's a huge difference. I mean, honestly, it's a huge difference from tax efficiency perspective. So you should be a little bit more flexible to write the check into the deal, but we'll see. So like, we're looking for the deal for Q4 right now. We want to do this preferred common equity mix with heavy depreciation, because we have a lot of mutual friends, CG Mastermind guys and girls, who want it. So we'll see.
Anything looking promising? What are you looking for?
Well, like multi is a good asset class to do this. I mean, right. we're doing open air shopping. You don't get the same. The leverage is way lower, right? And you get a higher cap rate, but your leverage is sub 60%. In the extreme case, is 65%.
And you're not getting as much bonus, right? Because of the
you don't have the doors and the you know, appliances and all that other stuff. So you have to, your overall ratio is way lower. So multifamily is the asset class. We haven't done much in mobile, but I'll tell you, mobile theoretically depreciates well. So at this point, it would be a multi. We need to start with a great deal. That's the best way to describe it, is we're looking for strong, good sponsor who is not overwhelmed with too many deals and they're really struggling to keep everything else afloat. Somebody who is got a, you know, could be even a small sponsor, but a great quality sponsor, and they're able to get a great deal. and it probably has to be a decent market. We looked at some smaller markets, pretty good cap rates, but you're dealing with smaller markets. You don't know what the future will be. So it's basically being on the other side of the motivated seller situation where they got to sell because of a forced sale. If you can get them into one of these situations, then it's interesting for us to raise the capital for the deal structured the right way. So that's kind of the 40,000 foot picture. And then the devil's in the details. Sure. You know, I'm cautiously optimistic we'll find it, but you know,
you'll find it.
Not at this moment, at the time of the recording, we don't have a locked in deal. But Q4, like, you know, we still got good portion of Q3, and then Q4 to close.
Well, keep me in the loop. Like, we'd love to either do both, throw a little money at it, and see if we can help with something.
Yeah, I'm absolutely. I mean, you gotta call you with a mortgage, with debt, and then we'll figure out the equity as well. So, Chris, I appreciate your wisdom. What's the best way for folks to reach out? Website, any information you want to share?
Yeah, C. Litzler, at MarcusMilichap.com. I'm not really on the socials, but you can find me on the Marcus Milichap website. We'd be happy to help any of your guys, run through any scenarios that are interesting.
And you're both. What's really amazing and fascinating, you are, of course, a mortgage broker, but you're also an investor. So investors can even reach out to you and have a conversation from investor perspective, because these discussions are so helpful to understand how lenders think about it, but you wear also an equity hat, which is, not many people do this. They either have one or the other, and you have both hats.
Yeah, happy to. I try not to operate my own real estate. I mostly just invest with my clients. We've seen a lot of stuff, the good, bad, the ugly. So happy to always share my opinions.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate your wisdom. And thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the summer.
All right, Mike. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing, Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.